All right. Tonight we have a, I'm very proud to announce, a very wonderful young lady who I heard at this at our 164 group meeting on Tuesday nights for the first time, and what she shares comes straight out of the book and comes straight from the heart, and I really enjoy what she has to say. So tonight I would like to introduce to you Miss Laura B.
Hi, I'm Laura Baker. I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't nervous until I sat like right down, and then I just really wanted to get this over with. My sobriety date is March 11th of 2005, and I say that it's by the grace of God, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and good sponsorship that I'm still sober today. Because as I've stayed sober, things have happened in my life that have really forced me to either go to God or not, and possibly drink. And it's been through a lot of the guidance of my sponsor that I've been able to keep going back to God and really rely on that power. And I just say God to keep it simple, because I think it's a short enough word that sort of, it's good for me. But I grew up half in Spain, half here. For a really long time, my whole identity was around the fact that I was Spanish. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, but my father's from Spain, and since my first memories are all in Spain, that was very much so like who I was. And my very first resentment that I can consciously remember had everything to do with my parents telling me we were moving from Madrid to Florida. I really didn't like that. Nobody asked me what I wanted. I was 7 years old, and to top it off, I really hated Florida. And that was a common theory or common thing also in my life was, It's Florida or it's America, and I just need to go back to Spain and go be European and, drink all day like the Europeans do. They don't really, but in my head, I thought, like, I could get away with it better over there. So I didn't speak English when I moved here. I'm 5'11 now, and I was 5'11 by the time I was 13, so I was always really tall and awkward and, had really thick glasses and, because they didn't have like what's called ESOL today or ESL today, I got put in the class with the special kids, and I just hated everything about moving to Florida. And for a really long time, it was something I pointed the finger at, like, oh, if I wouldn't have moved to Florida, like I wouldn't have come out this way, And I don't really remember the first time I drank, because alcohol was always in my house. My parents, drink wine with their meal. They don't get drunk. To this day, I've never seen my father, obliterated. I've seen that man drink, but he doesn't seem to have the same relationship with alcohol that I have. But I can remember the first time that I drank the way that I wanted to, and it was the summer between 8th and 9th grade. I went back to Spain for the summer, and over there, if you can walk into a bar and go up to a bar and ask the bartender to make you something, they make it for you. They don't really card you. Like I said, I was 5'11 at this time, so no one really thought I wasn't 16 or 18. I think the drinking age is 18 over there. So I proceeded to do, for the first time, to do what I wanted to do with alcohol. I had always asked for more. As when I was younger and my parents would give it to me, but my father would always say, like, no, you're just supposed to have one. You're not supposed to have more than one. One's good for the heart, but you don't need more than that. And this particular night, I ended up drinking the way I wanted to. I started, with really disgusting stuff. Red wine and Coke is a drink in Spain that you drink. And peach schnapps and like orange soda. And to tell you the truth, like, I don't remember much of that night. I know I blacked out. When I came to at like, I guess it was like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. I had apparently picked up a guy at a bar. I was in the middle of the town or the city I was staying in. I didn't really know where I was. Initially, I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to get caught. But somehow I managed to get my way out of that. And the next morning, I had my first hangover. And I learned and I realized that morning that I had to do two things. I had to learn to drink better so I wouldn't get a hangover. And that I had to learn to lie better. So that I could always have backup plans and not, you know, worry. But I proceeded to basically do that the whole entire summer I was there, you know, for 2-3 months. And I went to the bar all the time. By the time I was done with that summer, you know, I could walk up to any bar in this part of the town and they knew me. And I was the American girl. I don't know why, but over there I was okay being American, but over here I wasn't. I was so confused. They knew me, and I loved it, and I loved everything that came with that bar life and going to bars and going to dancing and going out dancing. You know, and so when I came back here, I really thought Florida sucked. Because at 14 years old, there's not that many bars you can walk into or clubs you can go into, even with a really good fake ID. So I you know, did what I did before that, and I sort of just pretended that, like, I was the perfect daughter. I'm the youngest of four, and, you know, my parents thought maybe they finally got it right with me. But all that it was that I was really good at lying to them. Like I said, that summer I sort of learned that, like, I just needed to get better at lying, to get what I wanted. I went back to Spain the next summer and immediately did, you know, started going to bars all the time. And, you know, in between these times that I would go back to Spain for the summer, I did everything I could to get my hands on alcohol, except I was also trying really hard to portray this image that I was the perfect daughter, so that my parents would, you know, stay off my back. And so eventually that fell apart, but I was really good at faking it and saying, like, oh, look at me, I'm so good at school. I was a musician. I was really into that, you know, look at me, I'm doing this, I'm getting accepted into these, you know, really awesome things for my music, and, you know, just stay off my back. And so they did that, because they thought, like, oh, Laura's not doing anything, and she's not sneaking around. But my senior year, so that summer before my senior year in high school, I didn't go back to Spain, and I sort of realized that I could figure out ways to get into bars, and I could figure out ways to get into clubs, and I just needed to get to know the right people. And if I got to know the right people, I could get what I wanted when I wanted. And so I began to basically be whoever you wanted me to be in front of you so that you could get me what I wanted, which was into a bar or into a club so that I could do what I needed to do. And my sister became a guidance counselor at my high school my senior year, and my sister's in the program. She's got like 9 months more sobriety than me. It's one of the big reasons of, you know, why I came here and what happened. She sort of guided me into AA in a way. But she wasn't sober at this time, so it was like the perfect excuse, because she could say, oh, Laura was just helping me, you know, counsel some students and some, you know, helping me with the stuff. And because I had been so good at, like, portraying this, like, perfect student and daughter image, nobody questioned me, you know, when I, you know, didn't show up for first period all the time, and nobody questioned me when I didn't show up for my last class. And I did dual enrollment, so I signed up for the most basic college courses I could possibly sign up for, but that meant that I was only supposed to be in high school for like 3 hours a day, and then I had some college classes. And, you know, you can, like, look at my high school transcript and, you know, my college transcripts, and, like, my senior year, it, like, all just went to hell. I'm not really even sure how I managed to graduate, because I started going to bars and clubs during the week. I wasn't going to school in the morning. My parents started saying, oh, you must have, like, senioritis or something. I was like, yeah, that's it. I just don't, you know, I don't want to graduate high school. But they had no idea what was going on. They had actually bought a house and moved, like, 45 minutes north of my high school. And I was like, that commute's too long. I have to start sleeping at my friend's houses here. And I used that excuse, and I just started basically sleeping wherever I wanted to. And, you know, it got got to know the people I needed to know in order to get go to these bars all the time, and I started hanging out with my sister a lot too. You know, the first time that anybody, or that it really came to head, like, you know, what was going on with me was my graduation day from high school. As I said, I'm not sure how I graduated because I failed English my last, I was in AP English and I failed it. I don't know why. I had to look good, so I signed up for AP, but I failed it because I wasn't really showing up for school that year. And my teacher was like, if you don't pass the exam with at least a D, like, I'm going to have to fail you. You're not going to be able to graduate. So, but luckily I did somehow. I don't even remember what I did, but the graduation night from high school, my school had this thing where they locked the doors, everybody stayed on campus. They were like, no drugs, no alcohol, no funny business, like, we'll have arcades for you. And I told my parents that I would do that because, you know, I was still playing that role of, like, I'm your perfect daughter and I never do anything to get into trouble. And I didn't go because a night without alcohol made no sense to me at this point in my life. I was 18 years old by this time, and alcohol was something that was in my life almost on a daily basis, and I didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with that. You know, it gave me a sense of well-being, for lack of another word, that nothing else could give me, and so I told him I was going to be there. I obviously didn't go, but I went to some party and, you know, proceeded to do what I did. And I think at like 6 a.m., I had a brief moment where I was like, oh, man, I got to get home. My parents are going to know. I wasn't at school. I mean, I was so loaded. I was so loaded I couldn't even drive my car. That's how loaded I was. Like, I couldn't even, like, put the key in the ignition, kind of. And I had to have a friend drive me to my parents' house. And, you know, me thinking, like, oh, I'll just pass out, you know, they won't know any better. I went up to my room and went and laid down in the clothes that I was wearing that night, with the pound of makeup on my face and the outfit that I had on, and I thought, oh, I'll just fall asleep, nobody will know that I, you know, when I came home. Like, I don't know, maybe it was 30 minutes later, maybe it was 2 hours later. Anyway, my parents came storming into my bedroom, and you know, I passed out, so you know what that's like. Yeah, there was sort of no denying at this point, like, what I had been doing, and I hadn't really been seeing them much because I wasn't staying at their house a lot. And you know, my father took one look at me and he was like, I can't believe you're doing this, you're just like your sister. And my mother proceeded to call me a bunch of names, and you know, they were like, we're not going to give you any help. You know, we learned with your sister that, like, we can't enable you. So we're not doing anything for you anymore. Give us the car keys. Give us your cell phone. You want to get to college? That's fine. You can figure out how to get to college in August when you're supposed to start. You know, and luckily, the first, like, month of my senior year in high school, I had actually applied for different universities because I wanted to get the heck away from where my parents. And I had gotten in full ride for all the music programs I had applied to, so I knew I was going to go to college. I didn't really care about that the rest of my senior year, but when this night happened with my parents, I sort of decided that I would just live out of a book bag for the rest of the summer and sleep on whoever couch I, you know, met at a bar that night. And I spent that whole entire summer. I don't really remember much of it, basically. But August came around, and I decided I was going to go to school in Miami, and I figured that all I needed to do was grow up and be responsible, and that I could stop drinking on my own. I didn't want to be like my sister, because she was a really good example of what not to do, and I thought I was better than her because I wasn't doing drugs. But I learned from you guys that no, not really. That's not the truth. That's not the case at all. But I did for a long time point the finger at that and say, like, I'm not that bad because I don't do drugs. But honestly, I'm really no different. But I went down to Miami and decided, like, I was just going to clean up and I was going to grow up. And not really sure why I thought Miami was a good place to do that, but I think I spent 2 weeks trying to, like, you know, be a normal college student. And then I just couldn't take it anymore. You know, in those 2 weeks, I met this guy at a party that I spent 2 weeks trying to hold it together. But the funny thing is I was still drinking there those 2 weeks, right? And I met this guy at this party on one of my nights where I was being good, or I was celebrating for being good, I should say. And he told me I didn't drink like a lady, and I told him that he was wrong, and I would prove to him that he was wrong. And so I spent the next year and a half trying to prove to him that he was wrong, and that I was okay, and that there was nothing wrong with the way that I drank. And you know, I basically what happened over the next year and a half before I ended up in AA was my entire family stopped talking to me except for my sister, and you know, my parents were just like, "We're not doing this again. Like, you're the fourth kid. Like, come on. Like, you know, we're not going through this again. You want to do what you want to do, fine." But so I basically stopped talking to them. You know, my two brothers were off doing their own thing, and my sister was just my brothers were mad at me, and my sister was pretty much the only one that would still pick up my calls. I was living this life of trying to be a good student at school, trying to be this, like, good girlfriend to this, like, really Cuban man who was, like, very dominant and possessive, and, you know, figuring out how to lie to him was really a great skill of mine. You know, lying to him and being unfaithful and doing all these things that, you know, I said that's not the kind of person that I was raised to be, I thought. But I didn't care, because if alcohol did for you what it did for me, like, you would have been doing the same things I was doing. I didn't see anything wrong with the picture until my sister took a job down in Miami, and at this time she had gotten sober by going to AA. She had been to treatment years prior for something else, and they told her that they thought she might benefit from AA when she was 18, and at 25 she finally went to AA. And I didn't know this was what was going on, but this is what happened. She came to AA, went to some meetings, didn't get a sponsor. 5 months went by. She went on a date with this guy who wasn't an alcoholic. He said, "Do you want a drink?" And she said, "Absolutely." Didn't even cross her mind to say no. And later on that night, she ended up at this man's house looking for some additional stuff. And, you know, that happened while she was living with me and while I was still drinking all the time. And I saw her, you know, the next day, and she was just completely distraught. And, you know, she was like, "I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know what I'm missing." And, you know, I have no idea what's going on in AA. I don't really get AA. I think it's weird. She, like, goes to these meetings. Like, people say my name. I'm an alcoholic. And I just thought it was weird. And she this time around, like I said, I didn't realize what was going on. She got a sponsor. And she got a sponsor who took her through the steps as they're laid out in the big book. And I saw an immediate change in my sister. I saw her talk about how excited she was that she was sober, how excited she was that she was doing these things with her life. And, like, all of a sudden this, like, light went on inside of her. And, you know, it was, like, undeniable. And I didn't realize what she had was a spiritual awakening. You know, I didn't realize that she had gotten a sponsor and worked her steps. I just knew she was, like, doing this writing, and she was doing this reading, and she was, like, talking to this woman a lot. And I thought to myself, well, maybe I don't have a normal relationship with alcohol, but I did hear something about, like, in AA, you guys don't, like, eventually learn to drink, and that just didn't sound good to me, because, like I said, a life without alcohol made no sense to me. And so I was like, I'm just going to go to church. I need to just get holy again. That's my problem. If I could be a moral person again, then that will fix me. And so my last semester down in Miami, which was the end of my sophomore year in college, I went to this retreat with the Archdiocese of Miami, and I went to confession, because that's what they wanted you to do. It was a retreat for people like me who had been away from the church, and I went to confession, and I, like, proceed to, like, basically do a fist up with this priest who has no idea what's coming to him. You know, I'm, like, an absolute mess. I haven't had a drink. I haven't had a drink in a few days. I'm throwing up on him everything that, like, you know, I've done. And I'm about to, like, I'm also going into, like, a mid-panic attack because I've got them all the time at this point in my life. And, like, the man was just like, miss, you know, God, and he, God bless the man. I know he was meaning well, but he had no idea what to tell to me. He had no idea what to say to me. You know, and if anything, all I really felt was, like, yes, a semi-release that, like, somebody knows all my secrets. But, like, you know, that really didn't last very long for me. You know, I got involved with the church, and I started going to Bible study, and I started trying to do all these, like, things to, like, reach out into the community and blah, 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 blah. All these things good church people do. And and I'm not saying that there's anything bad about that or anything wrong with that, because I think that, like, if you've got AA and you do church, like, that's just going to add to your spiritual life with God. But for me at this point, I didn't have God. I didn't have AA at all in my life. I didn't think I was an alcoholic, and I'm trying not to drink, but like, church just wasn't enough for me. What happened was that 2 months later, you know, with this change I'd seen in my sister, you know, me thinking, like, oh, I was never as bad as her, so maybe I caught it soon enough. You know, I go to this party. It's like a wine and cheese party. You know, no one's getting trashed. These people don't, you know, do what I do. And I'm like, I'll control it tonight. And it wasn't any different than any other night. I got a couple glasses of wine in me, and then I got a couple bottles of wine in me, and then I don't remember the night because I blacked out, and my roommate ended up carrying me out of there. You know, and the next morning, there I am. I can't figure out why I can't just take, you know, drink two glasses of wine. And my sister's all happy about being sober. And I'm like, I don't know. I you know, at this point, you know, I've broken up with my ex because I'm tired of lying to him. And just this double, triple life I'm leading is getting really exhausting. I've stopped playing my instrument. I'm like, I don't even have it in me anymore to do music. My great idea is, I just need to go back to Spain. So I went and got my citizenship, and I proceeded to do everything I needed to do to move to Spain. Got transferred and accepted and transferred my transcripts to a university over there. I was going to go move in with family over there. I thought that would fix it all. And so I did all the work, but I couldn't leave, because I couldn't leave until August, and this was now March. And, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself, because at this point I can't not drink anymore, and I can't imagine my life without alcohol, and I know if I keep drinking it's only going to get worse for me. And I was talking to my sister really honestly this one day after that party, and she was like, you know, why don't you come to some meetings with me, you know? And at this point, no one's talking to me. My ex is out of my life. I'm doing terrible in school. I've lost all my scholarships. I'm taking out so many student loans to live because I can't keep a job. Because as soon as I don't like somebody or the way they look at me, I'm like, peace, no show, no call, and I get another job. You know, and I can't keep anything together. And so I'm like, all right, whatever. What have I got to lose? You know, my first experience with AA was actually a young people's conference, or a FICCIPA event. FICCIPA is the Florida Conference for Young People in AA. It was a camping trip. And, you know, I do think part of my hang-up was that I was 19, about to turn 20. I was like, there's just no way I can go the rest of my life not drinking. That was no fun. And I was like I said, I was able to point the finger and be like, I wasn't as bad as her. So I didn't really want to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. But I went to this event, and I don't remember what, you know, much of what was said. I remember being blown away at the fact that, like, I wasn't the youngest person there. There were far younger people than me there. There were far older people than me there. It was like the biggest mix of people I had ever seen that made no sense to me. I mean, honestly, if you look in an AA meeting, it makes no sense sometimes. It's sometimes, you know, it's like, wow, like, how do these people mix? But it's because we all have that common bond of alcoholism and that hell and that recovery that we get from going through the steps. And, you know, that's not something I could have put into words then, but, like, that's definitely what made me keep coming to AA. I think I lasted about 3 weeks before I had this one night where I was having a panic attack again. And, you know, at this point, I haven't had a drink in weeks. I haven't gotten a sponsor. I'm, like, so hung up on whether or not I'm an alcoholic that I even go to Al-Anon, because I'm like, maybe I'm just screwed up because my sister's screwed up. And I'm going to, like, Al-Anon and AA, and I have no idea what's up or left or right or down or whatever. And I go to my sister, and I'm, like, mid-panic attack, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I was like, you know, I go to these meetings. I hear these people talking about alcohol the way that I think about it and the way that I feel about it, and I'm talking, like, you know, these gruffy biker men, and I'm not gruffy and a biker or a man, and I'm, you know, I'm relating to these men, and I was just like, what is up with me? You know, I was more willing to admit that, like, I had a mental illness than, like, I was an alcoholic, because the thought of not drinking was just not something I wanted to give in to. And so I talked to her, and I'm, like, you know, freaking out. Voices are in my head, because I had, like, 5 at that time. And she's just like, why don't you just go write a log of, like, what happened every time you drank, you know, when it started, every time you drank, what happened. And I was like, all right, whatever. I don't really see how this is going to help me. You know, I'm like, snot's coming out of my nose, my eyes are like red and puffy, and I'm just like a mess. And she's like, just go do it, trust me, and ask God to direct you. And see, at this point, I didn't have a problem with God. I thought God was there. I thought he was here, not in here. And even though I'd been very active in church, I didn't have a personal relationship with God as I understood him. I had a relationship with God as other people told me to. And so I was like, all right, I don't know what praying is going to do, but sure. So I went and I wrote, and, you know, I'm an absolute mess, and I don't even know what I'm writing at this point, because I'm just, you know, going away on the paper. And, you know, at one point I stop, and my head's quiet, I looked down on the piece of paper, and I had written down that I was an alcoholic. You know, when I looked at what had happened when I drank, the progression of what had happened with my alcohol use, after hearing what you guys had been saying in meetings for weeks, it was sort of undeniable at this point that I was an alcoholic, because when I started drinking, I never knew what was going to happen, and when I stopped, I didn't know how long I was going to stay stopped. And you know, I was at the point in my alcoholism that, like, I could stop for a short period of time. That's just my story. If that's not yours, like, don't worry. Like, doesn't mean you don't belong here. Trust me, there are a lot of people that you could talk to about it that aren't like me. But I am an alcoholic because when I start, I don't know when I'm going to stop. When I am stopped, I don't know how long I could stay stopped. And, you know, that delusion that I might someday be a normal drinker was very much so present in my head and at the forefront, because I thought if I could just manage well, then I'd be able to drink the way I wanted to, and it wouldn't take apart my life, it wouldn't rip it apart. And so I go back to my sister. She's like, you should just get a sponsor. So the next night I actually picked up a white chip, and I had been sober for several weeks at this point, like I had said, but I had finally conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I realized that night that I was never going to get better. I was never going to drink like a lady. I don't know why I thought I could, because it's not like I ever did, unless somebody else was controlling the liquor, and then I just wouldn't be around you, because why would I be around someone who's going to control how much I can drink? The next night I went and I got a sponsor, you know, and I mean, this woman was, you know, this tall, had, like, handmade clothes. She was, like, a total hippie, you know, but she had this light in her eyes, just like my sister. And I was like, you know, I don't know what you did to get that, but, like, that's what I want. I want to be free. You know, she was like, okay, go home, read the doctor's opinion. So I did, read the doctor's opinion. You know, and every time, you know, and we started going through the steps, you know, and every time we would meet to go through the book, you know, she was really big on, like, talking to me about the history of AA and as we went through steps, like, you know, different things. And I was amazed that this book was written about me, because that's basically how I felt. You know, and granted, at this time, I'm thinking I'm still moving to Spain, right? Because, you know, I did everything to do that. I set it up, and, you know, it's now, you know, April, May of 2005, and I'm supposed to go to Spain in August, and I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, you know, the only reason I really wanted to move to Spain had nothing to do with going back to this culture I was used to. It had everything to do with the fact that, like, I thought I'd be able to get away with drinking the way I wanted to drink over there, and I don't know why, but I had this sense of comfort and knowing that, like, I was right where I needed to be here in AA. You know, everything that I'd been hoping to figure out in life, sort of, you know, sort of, I found that in the pages of the Big Book and in the way that those pages have taught me to have a relationship with God. And, you know, I got to tell you, I really didn't, like, think I would stay here. You know, I was like, you know, maybe you guys will just teach me how to apply spiritual principles and then I'll be able to drink normal. But for some reason, you know, obviously God had other plans. You know, it's been a little over 7 years since I've had a drink, and I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink. And I'm, you know, my life in AA is something that I never could have come up with, you know, because, like I said, when I got sober, I couldn't have relationships with people. Anybody that really knew me didn't want to know me. I couldn't keep a job. You know, I'm in a ton of debt because the only way I can live is by taking out student loans. I can't get it together with school because that actually requires showing up. And anything that required showing up, I just wasn't good at anymore. And yet, you know, here I am years later, and I've been able to go back to school and finish my bachelor's degree, and I started a career and have gotten married and all these, like, you know, grown-up things that I saw people do, and I always thought that could never be me. I could never get it together to be happy in life. But, you know, as I was going through the steps, my experience was that, you know, that first night I went to meet with my sponsor, she was like, you know, I feel like you get two and three already, but you don't really get step one. And I was like, I'm not sure what you mean by that. And she was like, you know, I think you get the whole fact that, like, you need a power greater than yourself, right? That's sort of like the concept behind step two. You don't need to have a specific belief in God or power greater than yourself, but you've got to have some sort of belief that there's something greater than you. And I very much so felt that, you know, already coming into AA, and I had already taken the steps to sort of turn my will and my life over to God as I understood Him, because I had gotten a sponsor, I had admitted I was an alcoholic, you know, I was actually being honest for the first time in my life with somebody, other than that poor priest. you know, even in that fifth step, I mean, even in that confession with that priest, it's not like I really told him the truth about everything, because I was so delusional about the truth at that point that it's not like he really knew the full truth anyway. But I guess I needed to, you know, be clarified on what it was to be an alcoholic. And so she did that by going through the doctor's opinion and by going through more about alcoholism. And like I said, everything in there was me. You know, maybe I wasn't a middle-aged Protestant married man like a lot of our first members in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was certainly irritable, restless, and discontent until I could experience the sense of ease and comfort that came at once from drinking. I know I'm totally paraphrasing, but, you know, that was me. And, you know, I remember going through the doctor's opinion and reading, you know, that line where it talks about, like, some of us are normal in every respect except for, like, the way alcohol is with us, and we're able, intelligent, friendly people. And I was like, oh yeah, that's me. You know, I sometimes think that, like, that was written so that delusional people like myself could be okay, you know, with being an alcoholic. was looking back on it, like, I wasn't able friendly at all. I wasn't able of doing anything, and I wasn't friendly at all because I was so consumed with myself that I couldn't have a relationship with anybody else. We kept going through the steps, and you know, I had a very profound experience doing my fifth step, really more the hour after my fifth step. I decided to do that hour on the beach, and it happened to be sunset. It was sort of like perfect occasion, and it was the first time in my life that I had actually felt like one with God, as I understood Him. You know, I had been going to church a lot, and I had been raised in the church, but I had never felt like I had any sort of higher power within me. And I didn't, for the first time in my life, think I was separate from God. I did finally believe that He was within me, and I felt so much relief from that. And you know, I think it was about a month after I had done my fifth step, I was sitting on a back patio at a friend's house, you know, with a pool party, and I was talking to my best friend at the time about it, and I was like, you know, I can't remember the last time I woke up and I wanted a drink, you know, and for me, the obsession was lifted without me knowing it was lifted, and, you know, I haven't had that obsession come back since to drink, you know, and I can't say that it was like exactly doing the fifth step because I had continued on with my steps, but I did, like I said, feel a tremendous sense of relief and direction and purpose after doing that. And so, you know, my experience with the amends is, it's kind of funny because my sponsor at the time was like, you made your list, okay, read the big book and go make some amends. And I didn't really get a lot of direction on it. I think I was like one of the first people she was ever working with. I called some people. I shouldn't have called some ex-boyfriends. I had no business calling them. And I have a different sponsor today, and she's very much so of the mindset that like, if you can't do it in person and, a letter isn't appropriate because you don't see them very much or whatever, like if it's not in a letter or in person, it's not really an amends to begin with. And so I definitely would have done things a little bit different with my amends. What I did have was some pretty yucky experiences with my amends, because when I went to go make amends to my mother, I say yucky because I didn't feel better. You know, I hear people talking about how they think the amends is supposed to make them feel better. But if you read the big book, it says that our purpose is to be of maximum service to God and His fellows. It's not, like, about me at all. And that's certainly what I got from the amends with my mother, was that it wasn't about me feeling any sort of relief. And at this point, I'm several months sober, and, you know, cat's out of the bag. My parents know exactly what was going on with me and why I never picked the phone up to call them, and why everything sort of fell apart, and they were really disgusted with me still at this point, and they thought for whatever reason that my alcoholism and my sister's alcoholism had something to do with their bad parenting. And it took years to really move through that. But I went to make amends to her, and she was like, yeah, I know what you're going to do. And your sister already came, whatever, talk to me. I don't really need to hear anything from you, because at this point, I don't really care what you have to say. It's words are meaningless because you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, she like really like handed me my ass on a platter, basically. But it was true. You know, I really hadn't been a good daughter. I'd been nothing but a liar, and I'd been deceptive and manipulative, and I hadn't really given her a reason to think that like I should demand respect or anything or belief in what I'm saying is finally true. I did my best to start making that living amends to my family, you know, and I did have some good experiences with some of the amends. I'm not saying I didn't have any, but this one particular one sort of set me off in the whole concept of living amends, and it wasn't just about, you know, like, I was wrong. What can I do to make it right? And then they tell me to stop drinking. No, it has to do with so much more than just not drinking for me. Because if I just not drank, but I behaved exactly the way I did before I came in AA, and at the beginning of being in AA, I'd be drunk again for sure, you know? And so I started living, as some people say, in 10, 11, and 12, and my life took on a new meaning, a new purpose. Like I said, I had no doubt that this is exactly where I needed to be. I felt like I said, I finally had a reason and like a direction in my life. And, you know, I started trying to pass this on to others. And what happened was, you know, I started learning that, like, I show up for things in AA that I don't want to do because someone asked me to, and I do that. And then all of a sudden I'm showing up at work, even though I don't want to, because someone's asked me to do that. And, you know, I show up at work consistently enough, and I do the job I'm paid for, and, hey, you can get promoted doing that. You know, and my first boss was amazing because, you know, she had actually lost. I ended up telling her I was in AA, and she told me, you know, I lost my first husband to this. I found him dead in the garage. He had killed himself with carbon monoxide poisoning. And, like, in a way, she was like, you know, whatever you need to do, like, do it, you know. And I think that was one of God's angels, for lack of another word, in my life, because she really, you know, let me do what I needed to do, and she also taught me everything she did. She knew about the professional world. And, you know, there are some people that, like, really apply spiritual principles to their life just because, you know, they're, like, good people. And she was one of those people. And I learned a lot about, you know, being a good employee from her. And a lot of the stuff really is in the big book. But she showed me through her actions. And you know, that sort of, you know, took its own, you know, little course with work, because I all of a sudden realized that, like, there was something that I was good at that I could show up for, that God had given me that specific talent to do, which I hadn't seen that at all before. I kept just trying to seek God, you know, and like I said, I had a lot of experience with church, but it wasn't until I went through the 11th step with my sponsor that I actually learned to have that personal relationship with God. I think the words in the big book between pages 86 and 88 are sort of the perfect foundation for anybody who doesn't know how to pray and anybody who doesn't know how to pray to God, because, you know, I started with that and I added to that. But to this day, although the addition to that stuff has changed from time to time as my relationship with God's evolved, I still go back to that 86 through 88. You know, I don't have to read it anymore because, like, I read it so much that it's, like, in here. I know those pages, and it's, like, in the back of my forehead there. But it's honestly, like, whether or not you're religious, like, that's just, for me, like, that was just a really simple but impactful way of praying. You know, I'm trying to, I'm supposed to go the whole hour, right? Okay. So, I didn't realize what time it was until just now. You know, and so, you know, what it's like today, like I said, I you know, went back to college. I got my bachelor's degree while I was working full-time and staying active in AA. I've always been really active to the best of my abilities working with others, because I find that it's really hard to tell people to do stuff that I'm not doing. And so it really forces me in a way to sort of keep, like, applying 10, 11, and 12. I'm not saying I'm perfect at that, because I certainly am not. You know, I had my son about 2 years ago, and for me, that was really difficult. Since none of you look like you gave birth to a son 2 years ago, I'm not going to talk about that too much. But, you know, what I did learn from that experience, you know, having my life completely flipped upside down, basically, which can happen in a lot of different, for a lot of different reasons. You know, I had a really hard time thinking that, you know, how could God manage my life? Like, I'm the one that has to wake up. I'm the one that has to take care of this little person 24/7. I'm the one that's got to do this and do that. And I started thinking, you know, me, I'm not really sure how God could help me manage all this, you know, and I had a really hard time with bringing God into that, into parenting, into being a mother, and I didn't realize that I was trying to manage it all, but that's exactly what I was doing. You know, everything I had learned from before that was all about, like, you know, like, I'm not in charge, I'm just God's agent, I'm just here to do the role he assigns. But for whatever reason, I had it in my head all of a sudden that, like, I had to be a certain way. And I set this expectation for myself and miserably failed, made myself really unhappy. But honestly, if it weren't for the fact that I was working with other women the way that I have been, I don't know if I'd still be sober. It sort of, again, forced me to keep going back to, like, what was basic and the simple things that we learn here in AA. And I'm so grateful that I get to experience, you know, passing this on with other to other women, because I think there's nothing else like it. You know, I really think there's nothing else like it. You know, AA for me is a way of life, and it's not because I'm always in an AA meeting. It's because everything I've learned through these steps and the traditions, I've been able to learn how to apply that to my life, and it just makes it way easier. You know, when I'm not pretending, when I'm not lying, when I'm not manipulating, when I'm not trying to get from you something that I need and give you what I think you might need, and when I'm not doing all that stuff to try and, you know, finagle my way into something I want, when I'm really just showing up to show up for the purpose of just doing whatever I need to do in that moment, I don't really have stress in my life. You know, my panic attacks went away. You know, very recently I had something happen with my family, and it made me realize the impact of my absence within my family. I thought by not talking and not letting anybody into my life that I wasn't harming, that I was doing you a favor. But some stuff's just been going on with one of my brothers that in his absence I'm seeing the domino effects that has. And it just made me feel really grateful over the weekend that, like, I've got AA in my life, that I've got a God of my understanding. Because I don't have to live that life anymore, you know? And if you're new, if you haven't been through the steps, you don't really need to understand what that even means. Just get a sponsor. Let them guide you through this, because your life can take on a new meaning, and you can be free from alcohol. And it's really, you know, I don't think there's any other way to live life, you know, at least for me. So, thank you.
Thank you, Laura. That was awesome.